We were celebrating the title in 2011 in Buzukyar, and everybody was drunk. Saz was drunk, everybody, Mike was drunk, and everybody. And Mr. goes and says, "Coach, what are we going to do tomorrow?" I look at him. It's 7 o'clock in the morning. We're going to sleep, yeah. You know? We're not going to shoot the ball.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is probably the easiest introduction I'm going to have to do in this whole crossover season. It's been 6 years, and the crossover with Joe R. Lucas is back, 25th anniversary. I didn't even prepare any type of entrance here because I have two superstars with me today. They're the most important players in the Panathinaikos time, what they call the golden era. And we're going to go over three championship seasons this year, 2007, 2009, and 2011. And I'm so happy to have number one, who was assistant coach at that time, Coach Dimitris Itoudis, and one of the best basketball players just recently named to the top 25 of all time in EuroLeague, Mike Batiste. Fellas, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Let's go right into it. Coach, you're in Panathinaikos. The things are going well, but it seemed like you needed some players. You guys go and find this guy, Mike Batiste. Between you and Sokol, what was the idea? Was it you needed another addition to the team? You needed a big man? What was the whole concept of going to get Mike Batiste to become, who became one of the best foreign players of all time on top of it?
It's a good that we start like that. So I don't know if Mike, when he was writing his book, Mike, I haven't read your book though. You got give me a red card for that. But I don't know if he wrote that. But the true story goes like that. So you know, Mike Batiste was playing as a small forward back then in Memphis, if I'm not mistaken. So he was shooting all around threes and all this stuff. And I got to make my search about him, and I make several calls. Then I called Jericho and I said, listen, he can play at four, he can play at five. He's playing three though, but we got to convince him to be four or five or so, whatever. So Jericho was in Serbia back then, and you know, pretty much he was really late because of the difference of the hours. So it was around 2:30. And I remember that I couldn't find Jericho at that time. And Mr. Thanasis, I mean, I couldn't find him. Like, it was like, you know. But we already talked. So Mr. Thanasis gave me a call at 2:30 in the morning. For me as a younger, so it's normal to stay that hours and at 4 o'clock so I can match the hours of overseas for United States. And we're in a signing period. And Mr. Thanasis was so, like, you know, furious, like, are we gonna sign him? Yes or no? Like, you know, and there were some other candidates. I think it was I know it very well. It was Hanno Motola at that time, like, either Hanno or Mike, and obviously we came. The rest is history. Mike is became a player of ours, and we're all happy, you know. So what happens afterwards? I gotta give you a small story about what happened afterwards, though.
All right, let's go, Mike. I want to know what it felt for you when you were in Belgium. Did you know about Panathinaikos? Did you know about Panathinaikos Olympiakos, or were you just kind of out there playing European basketball like a typical American who doesn't really know what's going on?
Typical American, don't know what's going on. I'm just trying to play and get better, provide for family. You know, I had no clue that there was a whole nother level to tap into. And then by the time I get to Italy, my second year in Europe, that's when the introduction of EuroLeague was introduced to me from a teammate of mine named Malik Dixon. I had the Sky satellite TV in Italy, so everybody would come to my house and watch NBA games, whatever. But this specific night, I was introduced to EuroLeague. It was Alfonso Ford or Olympiakos and Anthony Parker with Maccabi. And like I told you from the first podcast, it means you did. It's like the moment I saw that game on TV, it was just a whole different level of energy, intensity. And I was just like, man, how can I be on that level? I didn't know how, but I was like, I got to find a way to be there. And eventually, you know, I go to Memphis, I play the year out, and then Panathinaikos comes calling, and I'm right in the thick of things, man.
And leaving Memphis, going back, because I mean, we all had that dream of playing in the NBA, leaving Memphis and all of a sudden handing over to Panathinaikos, did you think that was the right move for you personally? I mean, you know, it's a move that's difficult because you're over in Belgium playing, you go back to the NBA, and then you're coming back to Europe again.
Yeah, I think it was the right choice for me at the time. You know, having the 2 years in Europe before I came to the NBA kept my mind open to everything. And once the situation of was presented to me from Panathinaikos, I did my own research. I looked into the country. I looked into the team. I saw they had history and tradition. They just won a yearly title like 4 or 5 years before I got there. So there were some things to work with, even though I had no clue of what I was really getting into. But it looked promising. And then again, like I said, I knew I was going to be in a EuroLeague competition one step down from the NBA in terms of competition. So I said, I'm just going to run with it and do my best with it and see what happens with it.
And coach, on the other hand, you guys also, the next year you sign, who's the Heracles and the Greek MVP from Heracles, the Dimitris Diamantidis. And Mike's over there laughing. Yeah, I love that guy. Now you're building something, you know, you look at all the championships you won, and when you look back on them, it's great, but there's always that prior part where you've built up to it, you know what I mean? And this is just part of, like, trying to create a dynasty here with players like Mike and with Dimitris.
Well, it was a tough period because Mike had to go to play on all of us. We had to move to Sporting, a small arena. Mm-hmm. So Mike will recall. I don't know if he recalls our conversation before he had signed, but he definitely remembers coming to this small gym and trying to make an adjustments because Athens was preparing for the Olympic Games and we had to leave Oaxaca. So, you know, that was a transitional period. And but still, the family Yannakopoulos, Mr. Pavlos and Mr. Thanasis, Mr. Kostas, the family Yannakopoulos, just they wanted to invest. They wanted to bring the best out of the best. They never stopped, including that period that other teams they were not investing. You know, we were trying to build the best. So and Jericho was, you know, we got built something different over here. And I think that bringing Mike and actually convince him, because I don't know how much he remembers, but here it is, the crossover to make him remember. He didn't want to play the five. Actually, he was like, as I said, and I mentioned that because he was shooting threes. He didn't want that much of a contact, you know? So he was shooting threes, and he will recall that the game we played against, actually, Toronto. We played against Raptors, Mike, a friendly game in the other arena that they used to play. And Mike was like 0-for-9. In that friendly game, he wanted to prove that still he can shoot the ball. God damn it. Like, and then, you know, we took him out on the side and he said, listen, watch your this muscle ass you have. You gotta put it down on the block and now kill everybody, man. You had a good jumper from the high post. You can post, you can pass the damn ball. So we gotta be a different team. And actually this move, it made other teams to follow this era with an undersized big. That he can be so dominant, so flexible, so, you know, so versatile. And Mike moving from a small forward position to a five and a good catcher, you know, with you mentioned Diamantidis or Spanoulis or Saras were throwing the ball and they were making plays out of them. So the guards that were feeling comfortable, they passing to Mike. Mike will deliver. So, you know, I put so many things that Mike has to recall about how it was in Sporting. I think that's a good point that in the first practices, he didn't know who was the head coach. Because Jacob, you know, he's sitting under the basket and he's like watching and he's like filming everybody if they're doing their job. And I was like running the practice and I'm like, who's the head coach? Like, you know, I said, he's the head coach. You're going to film him now, you know, when he starts yelling.
I don't think it took too long for him to figure that one out.
He took the oh, no. When he made a mistake and he put like sprints and everything, like he said, okay, that's what it is.
Mike, how did you feel about going to the five spot?
It was
after going 0-for-9, you don't have much of a case, right?
Not really, but but at the end of the day, it's like I have to be on the court. So let me try this thing out. Of course, it's uncharted territory. I have no clue of how to play the five, but you know, being out there, you know, I gave it my all. You know, I was going to find a way, make an impact on the floor. And be a different kind of player, you know, and it started working out beautifully. You know, game after game, practice after practice, you start seeing what can become from this new position, especially with the guard play that we had. And, you know, I started loving it. They started loving it. And then we started to build upon that. You know, you guys already know about the classic pick and roll offense that we used to run there. This is where it started. And, you know, Etudis and Joko, they went back after practice. They drew up a game plan. And again, practice by practice, game by game, we started to elevate. And it became something historic.
Man, look, I going over all these the stats and everything, as I do before I do these interviews, and I'm looking, I'm like, man, you're in Belgium, you're playing, you go back to Memphis, all of a sudden you come back to Panathinaikos, and you're a lucky bastard, man. The first year is 2007, and Final Four is in Athens on top of it, in your home court. I mean, that's pretty crazy to have that type of opportunity to not only get to the Final Four, but to have it in your home court.
No doubt. I mean, but you also got to understand there were some trials and tribulations before we got to that point. We actually went to the Final Four in Moscow. So we got like a taste of it, and we wanted that feeling again. So as players, when you're not successful from a goal, you go in the summer, you work out, you're determined and disciplined to get better and become a better version from the last season. Then in 2006, this is when we lose the towel at Awaka, game three, heartbreaker. And it was just, you know, it just wasn't a good feeling, right? And then you go into the summer, you get this big announcement that the Final Four is right in your backyard, like you said. And from there, you're just like, you're so motivated to get back over there to try to like hurry up, get the season started so we can get to this point. But, you know, with the Tudors and Joko, they kept the bigger picture, you know, really subside, and we had to focus on the task at hand. You know, it's levels that you have to take and steps that you have to take before you get to that main goal. And we had to go through some trials and tribulation, even, you know, that 2007 season, you know, to become number one at the end of the season. So it's never a clear perfection picture. You have to go through some things and learn some things about yourself or about your teammates before you can elevate and become champion.
Man, if it was that easy to get there, it wouldn't be worth it. That's for sure, man. Once you get there, it's worth it.
No doubt.
Coach, for you guys, you, Joko, and the rest of the coaching staff, how difficult is it for coaches to kind of maintain it? Because, you know, sometimes it's better to be on the road for players. You know, you got them under control. You got them, you know, they're in the hotel room. They got dinner together, all this other stuff. Being at home is not as easy because you got family members, you got friends calling up, wanting tickets. Everybody wants to get in the game. What did you guys do from the technical side to kind of make this team focus? I know that with the loss the year prior to Tao and getting back to the Final Four, it shouldn't be that difficult, but sometimes it is.
Well, allow me, Joe, to before we get to this point, which is very, very interesting, like being the favorite throughout the season, give some credit to Mike as a person and as an individual and as a player. You know, Mike did not have the best first year in PAOK. He had signed for 2 years. And as I said, he was playing a little bit like a stretch four, trying to find his moves, you know, try to get into the system in Sporting and everything. And then that was the transitional period. The next season, it was the season that actually show us that Mike really has a character. He has a determination. He wants to be here, and he's going to give us something extraordinary. So the decisions he had to make as an individual towards the contract he had signed, the commitments he made towards the head coach and the coaching staff and to the fans, it was something you can't find easily to a foreigner, an American that became a Greek. Actually, he became a part of Panathinaikos. So, right. But at that moment, now it's easy to say because you know the story. But allow me to know Mike better because I had like a lot of individual talks, and I had one phone call that it was his agent was mad because I did that phone call to say to him, "Hey, Mike, this is your home over here. You stay over here with this guy with Joko. And with these funds, you're going to succeed, man. Maybe you're going to make it looks like a step back that you're going to play at five. Maybe you're going to make some, you know, a different story with your money wise over there, but you're going to stay over here. You're going to succeed." I hope that Mike remembers that phone call. And then he did it because it's different somebody to tell him and to have this character as Mike has to say, yeah, hell yeah, I'm going to do it because I have a good teammates. I have my head coach is great. He has an experience. The environment is good. I have the management and actually the presidents that they can guarantee the stability over here and the sustainability. And I have fans that they love me. So that was a key point for Mike to remain to Pyle. I repeat, not the best year. The first year was with a lot of doubts. Did we make the best choice out of him or something? By giving us back this, what he gave, and make all these adjustments, he just proved that he has a character and he's something good to build on. Now, going to 2007, as you said, being a favorite team and everybody is on you having this title, let's don't forget we have lost two point guards in the preseason. In the summer, Jaka Lakovic goes to Barcelona and right. Spanoulis goes to Houston. Uh-huh. So, you know, we have to build the team that has to win it all, which eventually did it. And we all know in a story with a three-peat. I mean, we won all three titles, the Greek Cup, the championship in Greece, and obviously the EuroLeague in Athens, the EuroLeague Final Four. We have lost those two point guards. And then, you know, Zheko had to find a way, and we all had to help him to find a different way. We have signed multiple other players that they help us in order to become a team that really can instill this, as I said, character, winning mentality, and all this to handle all this pressure that a team has to have. Because until that moment, usually the teams that they host the Final Four, they go south, they go bad. I mean, Mike mentioned the Final Four in Moscow that CSKA was the number one favorite because they were playing, they were kicking asses, they were playing great basketball. And eventually, you know, like in that Final Four, Maccabi was the one that we almost beat them at the semifinal, but Maccabi had won the title. So right. What we did as coaches was we're trying, coming towards, obviously, during the season, we had to work on that, the character, the fact that you're going to play under pressure. The fact that you're playing always with a must win. So you gotta, you know, we used all these stories that Mike said with the Taugres, with the Final Four in Moscow. But coming to the Final Four, Zheko came to me and said, okay, let them now play games. So one of the last two practices before the Final Four, we were just playing chasing games. We were playing hiding games. We were playing like silly things, like to get them out of the pressure.
This is a Zheko trick right there. He's always done stuff like that.
Yeah, 100%. That's a good teaching point. You know, like players that were like, all right, like we know it. We did it. We got to go making it happen. But
Coach, you keep rambling on about losing Spanoulis and losing all these players, but you also signed players like Sasauskas, Tomasevic. I mean, you still have players, but...
That's a good point. That's a good point. That's Zheko. Zheko found on Šiška. Yeah, you know, he comes one day, he says Šiška is the next big thing. That was completely his idea. That was completely his, you know, instinct and a hint. He says Šiška has it all, man. He can play with the ball. He can stretch the floor. He can go down on the block. And Tomasevic, he knew he's a point guard at the body of a five. He can, you know, he can dish that ball, you know.
Right.
Probably he was the only Serbian. He has a problem because he was not shooting threes. That's why I'm joking. Shakota used to tell him, you remember, Mike? Shakota was making jokes. You're the only Serbian you can't shoot threes. But then, like, he was like, yeah, shooting. He didn't need to shoot that ball because he was shedding that ball. He was tremendous. Like, and also... You know, a lot of other players. Tony Delk came and the Yavtokas came, and both of them, they were not the ones that they play minutes, that a lot of minutes on the Final Four, but they were a very important part on this, like always. Building the team, you know, like Sani Bakirovic and many other players like that. You know.
Always have players like that. Those are the most important players.
And we were that close. We were that close to sign Drew. I mean, she's like, Drew. I made a call to Drew. Drew decided to stay to Efes and make numbers for himself because he did great numbers. But we have won the title, and this is the next year that Drew came. He says, "I wish I could have come there the year before. I would have had one more title."
Hey, Mike, talk to me about the Final Four, guy, because I mean, so far I've done a couple of these, three or four of them, and it's easy to talk about one championship, but you guys, I got to talk about three of them. So I got to try to fit all three of these in. Talk to me about the Final Four, because you guys played Tau Ceramica in the semifinal, right?
And oh yeah,
and you hold them to 53 points. I mean, you shut them down with some big time players.
Oh yeah,
and then I want to combine the two of them. So I'm gonna let you go from semifinal to final, and then it's just a shootout against Cheska, 93-91 final championship game. What are the difference between these two games? 53 points in one game. You guys only scored 67, but you shut down some of the best players in Europe at that point.
Yeah, I really wouldn't call it a revenge game. I would call it a get-back game. I mean, we just lost to Tau
for losing the playoff, right?
The year before, right? So like, we got a little...
That's revenge get-back. Call it whatever you want to call it. You want a crossover. You call it whatever you want.
We're going right. It's a revenge game, but... At the end of the day, we still had to stay even keel, because you can really let those emotions get ahead of the game plan and what you have to do on the floor. So you really had to really subside those feelings and worry about the task at hand. So, we went out there, we did our job. I remember the day before the game, I remember me, Demos Dekutis, we're sitting there talking about Scola. We're sitting there talking about Splitter and how we're going to defend those guys. And Dekutis, first thing he said, hey, don't worry about nothing. I'll start on Luis Scola, and I will take care of this. You take care of Tiago Splitter, and we'll figure it out after that. Once Dekutis set that tone, I was ready right after that, and it was just a trickle-down effect from everybody else. It really didn't take much to get the whole team going. We knew what we was there for. So, that semifinal game was a phenomenal defensive exhibition, right? Physicality, intensity, we pressured the ball, we rebounded the ball, we communicated coverages, anything that we had to do at a high level, we did it. And obviously, of course, we succeeded and advanced to the final. And making it to the first final, you have a different butterflies in your stomach, you know what I mean? Because this is the game. This is what we worked all year for. This is all the stories that we heard from Jelko, from Dekutis, about those guys winning yearly titles previously before we got there. So this is our chance to have that feeling. This is our chance to sit at the table with other champions and, enter into that game. There's, if I can show you this picture, it's me, it's Francisco Alvertis, it's Costa Sazzarisa. All three of us are lined up by each other. And if you can see the intense look in our face, you will know that we was not losing that game that night. It's in our backyard. We have our fans, our family is there. There was no way we was not walking out of Owaka like with that title in our hand. So, we started the game very well. I think we got up by like 10 points against Cheska, but knowing that they have a championship pedigree, we knew that the game wasn't over. We get into the second half. We get into this dog match back and forth. We finally get into the fourth quarter. Chiskaus is making good plays. He's getting to the free throw line. Tomasevic is making, some big plays in the end. And eventually, the clock hits zero and we're the team on top. And we finally capture like that elusive title that we've been dreaming about, talking about for the last 4 years. Because I told you 3 years before that, there was a lot of trials and tribulation before we actually won the EuroLeague title, losing in 05, losing in the playoff in 06. That was some built-up animosity to get to this point. So, once we became successful and we got that first title, it was the greatest feeling in the world. And, to be recognized as a champion, that will go down like forever. When people talk about a 2007 year, it's Panathinaikos and your name is amongst that team. So it was a very, very proud moment for myself, but also for Panathinaikos. That was the first time they won it in like 4 or 5 years. So that was a big deal. And then again, like you're saying, being serenaded by your own fans, That was just an out-of-body experience that a lot of players wouldn't experience, and that was a great feeling for me then.
That's amazing, man. It's an amazing feeling to win this league. Like you said, there's so much that leads up to it that most people don't see or don't remember.
Right.
You know, that you've gone through the pains, the trials, the fact that maybe after the first year you could have been cut because you weren't the player that they thought you were going to be, like Coach just told us a minute ago.
Yeah.
And the little thing I'm disappointed about is I spent a year in Ike playing every day against Demos Degulis, and now all of a sudden you're telling me he's a defender in that game. I was trying to teach him how to play offense.
Well, listen.
You got to throw with Jacob White, and he chose you, you know. Jacob was always talking highly about you.
I wasn't playing any defense.
But listen, I tell you what, certain, like, I felt that 2007, you're like, we've had enough experience, even though we didn't win it. And I felt as players, we was becoming coaches of ourselves. We was holding ourselves accountable for everything we did right, everything we did wrong. And yes, some guys are not defenders, but some matchups, some games that they've played against certain guys, you know, they know their tendencies. You know, we've been playing against Luis Scola for years at this point. Tiago Spitter years at this point, and everybody else that was in that Final Four. And as players, when you're playing against guys every single year, you start to find out their strength. You start to find out their weaknesses. And I think Dakudas had a better feel for Luis Scola at that time. So he took the job, he ran with it, and everybody else kind of followed suit. When they had to match up against Scola, they had to bring that same intensity that Demos is bringing.
Something which is important is, and of course, it comes from the coach. Now, Mike will understand me, because we prepared that game, and Tau was coming in this Final Four with a new coach, Boža Marković, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Right, it was Boža. That they were averaging almost 100 points.
Right,
they were
exactly.
They were kicking asses.
Like, yes,
they were. They were coming to this Final Four averaging almost 100 points. When the players are locked in, you know, like you come as a coaching staff with a whatever plan is, because nothing is wrong at the end of the day. A coach prepares something. But if the players, they believe in you, they will look at your eyes and will say, yes, that's it. We're going to do it. And then they bring it from the theory and they put it to the court. And you see that happening because the strategy on the game, on the final game, we have to deal also with a great team, a great coaching staff, a great coach, and a great team that with Teo Papaloukas and Langton and Holden, they were playing that trio, and we just built our strategy on, all right, guys, we will not let Langton and Holden getting any shot. If we have to lose that game tonight, we're going to lose it from Theo Papaloukas. So we're going to make Theo a scorer and not them. If you're going to see, yes, it's 93-91 is the last shot that, if you see the image, like Jared Holden is making that last three-point in front of our bench. And I go to the referee, he touched the line. He did touch the line. I swear to God, he touched the line. Why? Because I was so keen and so I had the tenacity that he says and the focus was there. They're not going to shoot the ball. And then Theo, you know, like he used to have a double team on him, you know, not to pass the ball. All of a sudden, he sees all the pass open. And the players, they had to feel like, hey, are we going to let him go on a layup? I said, yeah, two-pointers is better than a three-pointer sometimes.
Right, exactly.
And this is, if you see the game, you will see it how Theo was the first scorer. And those guys, they were not almost participating in the game. But again, the full credit goes to the players. They locked in and they absorb this strategy, the theory, and they put it on the floor and said, that's the way. We're gonna go and do it.
So the strategy was let Papaloukas just go off and stop everybody else. That's a sense, because he had, 23 in that game, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they were running so good. The diamond for them, when the three of them, they were playing, you know, they were so like a machine. Kale will find him, then they're going to find him, and then you all of a sudden has one on a post and four shooting, and then we said, listen, we're not going to spend the second player on Theo. I mean, we have pretty good defenders. Even if we have to suffer with some layups, they're going to touch the ball.
Right. So. Yeah, and I remember that game plan, too, because at first it's like when you're given this information, you're like, okay, how does this work, and how will we implement this, like, right when the game starts, right? letting somebody be a scorer is totally different than what we did, but you know that it's part of the game plan. And as players, you have to understand, what are you willing to live with and what are you willing to make work? You know what I mean?
Right.
So what we had to live with is allowing or making Papa Luka's a scorer, but what we had to make work, those baseline stagger screens that Trajan Langdon was coming off, we had to switch and make sure he doesn't get any kind of daylight, because you know, if he came off of a screen with a little bit of separation, that quick release was gone. It was hitting the bottom of the net. And we all know the type of shooter Trajan Langdon is, and he can really put you in a very difficult situation. So the game plan worked like to a T, honestly, minute by minute, possession by possession. We was locked in to everything. And regardless of the game, the ebb and flow, we're up 10. Okay, the lead is cut down to 2. We never like got nervous. We stuck with the game plan. We kept running our stuff. We kept defending. And of course, you saw the final result at the end. We became champions. So, you know, big time stuff from former players, the coaching staff who put us in that position to be successful. And like Coach said, like, the big up to the players, man. We really was locked in and we went out there and we executed the game plan 100%.
That's a tough one, man, because you got three guys like that playing against you, and you have to pick your poison. Which one am I going to let have a big game?
Yeah, no doubt. And also, you know, Cheska, they won the title the year before. So we already know that they're defending champions. We already know that they're not going to lay down easy. We had to beat them. That's the thing. Like, you can't look up at the score and kind of relax and like, okay, it's done. You have to beat a team like Cheska with that type of firepower and also winning the EuroLeague title the year before.
Good game plan. It worked, obviously, 93-91 final. And that first, that's your first one, man. I mean, incredible feeling, right? Because I got to get to 2009. I got to skip 2008. We don't want to talk about that one too much. And no, go to 2009.
You know, we did it every 2 years. So,
I know.
You know, players that want a sabbatical every second year.
All right, fellas, let's move on to 2009, because you guys want so many, like I said before, you're doing so many damn titles. I got to try to get at least 3 of them in on this podcast. Tell me about 2009. You lost a few players. You signed some new players. Siskauskas leaves the team.
That was a shock. That was a shock, to be honest. Like, because, you know, we thought that we had Cheska for 3 years. And all of a sudden, it was a clause in his contract for the buyout. And obviously, Cheska, you know, was informed, and it was like, you know, tipped on that, hey, Cheska might have a buyout. So Cheska bought out his contract, and Cheska is leaving. So he goes to Cheska. And that was, as I said, you know, Cheska believed a lot, and with reason. You've seen what career Cheska had. So we're losing him, and now we have to rebuild and do a different, let's say, role to the different players. And then all of a sudden, you know, the media and everything, it was like, okay, the history says that whoever from the Greek teams that they faced in the semifinal winning, then they go to the final and they lose the trophy. And I remember, like, I had an interview saying, like, hey guys, let's have this to handle. Let's go to the final, and we will handle very well if we win against Olympiakos. Olympiakos was a complete team as well, like with tons of experience and a great coaching staff and everything, you know. But we, as a team, we already start rolling. This is what you just said about the era. Like, the core of the team was already together many years. And as Mike says, they could see each other and they know what is going wrong. You never had the feeling, even if it doesn't go well the game, that you will not compete and you will not bring the game the way you wanted to. You're feeling it. Olympiakos was the team that was, they were building, you know, they were in the process of building something different. We are already there. We've been there. You know, I'm not saying it was a hell of a game also, that game. That semifinal, we can talk. Or that final four, we can talk hours and hours about the semifinal and about the final, and especially about the last decision, you know.
The only thing I can imagine is when Panathinaikos goes one place, Olympiakos wants to be right there the next year, and vice versa. That's an eternal battle between those two incredible clubs. But Yeah, I mean, I there's a lot to talk about the playoffs too, because the playoffs were a little bit rough for you guys to get there, you know, against Montepaschi, and you know, that wasn't an easy road either. So if you want to touch quickly on the playoff, I want to know a little bit about that. You guys lost game two, I think it was.
Yes, we did.
They tied the series, and this is where we build the character.
Mm-hmm.
This is where you know, this is where you can feel the team, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
as a coach, you see that coming, don't you? You see
100%. The players, they never doubt themselves. You know, everybody you're seeing, like, yes, we lost the game. We did this. You know, this in 2012, we pretty much witnessed the same, because we are up 1-0 in the series with Maccabi. Maccabi ties the series 1-1, and we go to Tel Aviv, where I am now, and Maccabi wins the third game.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And we me and Jacob, we're going to watch the film, and it was like around, I don't know, 1 or 2 o'clock, and Mike and Nick Calafis, they say, we're coming. They didn't want to sleep. They said, I said, hey, tomorrow we're going to have a film. They said, no, we're coming with you.
We're going to watch it now.
We stayed until 5 o'clock in the morning watching the film with Mike and Nick Calafis to see the mistakes we did and the criticism that Nick Calafis and himself they had. Uh-huh. I said, listen, we're going to bring that to the film tomorrow with all your teammates. I said, okay, hit us, because we deserve. And this is what we did in 2009. And those guys, they were so locked in, and I said, we're going for two wings, not for one, to bring the series back to Arca. We're going over there for 2 weeks.
Sometimes the playoff is the hardest step to get there, because trying to beat a team over various games, you lose the home court advantage, it becomes a little bit more difficult. But I want to get right into Final Four. I want to get into as a player, as a coach, I'm sure it's the same thing. When you're playing for, in my case, Real Madrid, and you play against Barcelona and you beat them, it's just another game. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, well, we beat Barcelona, it's just another game. But man, when you lose to them, it's devastating, you know? And going into a Final Four and having to face Olympiacos, I think that was the first time, if I'm not mistaken, that you guys, Olympiacos or Panathinaikos, played in a Final Four, in a semifinal. What was that like? I mean, is there added pressure? It's your eternal rival. You got Olympiacos, Panathinaikos.
Oh yeah, it's added pressure, because like I've always said, you got two teams fighting for European supremacy. But for me personally, like I thrived on those pressure games. I thrived on those type of hostile environments. So whenever we played them, I felt like I knew that I was going to give my best, right? So it was no different of playing them in the semifinals. Yes, bigger platform. Yes, it's for a bigger championship. But just like every game in the Greek League that we played, I just came with the same focus, same mindset, same intensity. So, you know, of course, the game starts. We start fairly well. You know, the game is going back and forth. I don't think nobody got above 5 to 6 point lead. And it was just going back and forth the way the game it should be, right? But, you know, in the end, I felt like we just had a little bit more. We made the right plays at the right time. And, of course, you know, we see the classic, you know, two-man game with Saric and Pekovic. You know, they run a little side ball screen. Saric passes it off to Peko, and he makes the layup. We go up two. We come back down to thin. And, you know, Adonis Fosis makes a very good play. A good defense, I would say, against Giannis Barusi. Made it tough for him to shoot his jump hook. Ball falls off the rim. We're victorious, and we know that we have another chance to win another title, you know, playing against Cheska. So that was a really, really big deal. Of course, I played well. Pekovic played well. Šarūnas really had a good game, controlling the tempo, possession by possession. He knew the right plays to call for certain guys to get them a shot or to allow them to play make. So we was very comfortable and never broke any kind of stride in terms of being nervous the way that the game is going. You know, we advance, we get out of that semifinal game against Olympiacos, a 2-point victory. And then, you know, we were playing against Cheska, a team that we played 2 years, you know, before. They just won the title again in 2008. I think the 2008 title was in Madrid. So again, they are trying to repeat. We are trying to win a second title for ourselves. And we getting into that game, and it's going more than great for us. You know,
you guys are up 23, man. It's 56-33.
Every pass is on time, on target. Every shot is falling in. We're running the lanes hard. Every screen is set the right way. Everything is going the way that we drew it up. Defensively, if you go back and watch that first half, it's a clinic, man. At least it's a testament to what we did. We made those guys miss shot. We made it tough for them through that first half. And like you said, we had this big 23-point lead. And as players, you know, you go into that locker room, you're trying to stay focused knowing that you have this lead. But you also know, like I said in 2007, that this team had the championship pedigree, and they're just not about to die down and let us beat them by 30 or 35. They're going to find a way to get back into this game. And lo and behold, right, when that third quarter came, man, it was a long third quarter, right? Your lead is cut in half. We're teetering a little bit. We're trying to stay composed, but we feel the pressure of this big lead just dwindling down. And then in the fourth quarter, you know, we started to feel a little bit more pressure because now this 8-point lead is down to 4, is down to 3, is down to 2, is down to 1. And we know that we don't have enough in the tank to kind of get over this hump. So this is where you talk about the classic timeout where Jelko Itudis, they're in the huddle. I have no idea what they're talking about. But as players as players on the bench, we're sitting there talking like, do we want to foul and put them on the free throw line where they will make 2 and we go into overtime? Or do we want to win by laying it out on the line and defending and just living with the results? So all 5 of us, it's me, Drew Nicholas, it's Sharunas, Dimatidis, we're all on the bench. We're trying to figure out what the hell we're about to tell the coaches before they come in here to the huddle. And Jelko, you know, he gives us a couple options. He said one option is to foul, the second option is to defend. We all said we want to defend, right? Mm-hmm. I think we knew at that time as players that if we went into overtime, it probably wouldn't have been the result that we wanted. I think we exerted every amount of mental energy, every ounce of physical energy. So if this game is going to be won, it's going to be won right now on the defensive end. And of course, you know, we get the stop with Drew Nicholas playing unbelievable defense on Shiskauskas. He still gets this shot off. And as I'm underneath the rim, I could tell it looked like it was going in. And it's just the slowest, like 3 to 4 or 5 seconds, you're watching the ball go in the air.
Exactly.
It hits the front of the rim, and you know it has a chance to bounce around and fall in. So it hits the front rim, hits the back rim, falls out of the front rim again, and then again, two-time champion again, and you're just excited, man. Tears of joy, everything is you're going through a wave of emotion, right? How the season started, how we got to this point. You know, we can talk about the whole season, the playoffs, whatever, the new players, but again, we had trials and tribulations that year too. We had to overcome them. And when you are rewarded from the biggest title of the year, everything that you went through that year, it was worth it, you know? And I think every player who goes through those ebbs and flows of a season when they're victorious at the end of the year, holding that yearly title, everything that they went through was worth it. The losses, the injuries, playing bad or having stretches where you didn't play well, It's all worth it. It's a testament to your character.
Sometimes I talk to somebody about, well, you guys were up by 23, like you were in this game, and the other team came back, and you know you had a timeout. What was said? Oh no, we just said we just got to keep going. We got to keep going. Now Mike was there. Mike's like, man, we were nervous, man. We knew it. We had nothing left in the tank. We were blowing it.
Oh yeah.
From a player standpoint, it's one thing. From a coaching standpoint, it's another. What was it for you and Selko when they were talking about going to play defense? What were you and Selko actually talking about?
We are 21 in the halftime. We go to 23, or we are 20 on the halftime. Salah scores on the beginning of the third quarter, a three-pointer. We extend the lead to 23. But as Mike says, they were putting pressure, a lot of pressure. Now, all of a sudden, the context are not the context. They want more desire on the ball. We have not left on the tank, as Mike said. So we're coming to that last moment. And then before Jelko goes, if you see, he hugs me, he puts his hand over here, he says, and I was talking. And that's the huge thing that, you know, Jelko at that moment, he wants to hear his second voice. You know, we all got to make decisions in life, but you always say, okay, what should I wear? What should I do? Should I do this or that? So he wanted us to hear like a justification of why not to foul. And
right.
Like the god of basketball, as Mike says, Drew Nicholas play a defense. That was not the best choice to have Drew Nicholas and Šiška because he shoot over him. He was the smallest one that we could have had. At that moment, we could have had another player switching on Šiška and trying not to give him a light, as a daylight, as Mike used to say. But at that moment, the history says that, and the ball goes, and goes out. You know, those are, like, you are coming from a mastermind to a fool, or from a fool to a mastermind, you know, like, why you didn't foul? Oh, great that you didn't foul. So, yeah, what we were talking is, like, just trying to justify why we don't have to foul. And Jaco goes, and Mike doesn't remember, but Jaco goes in order not to give the options, but if Jaco goes and says, hey, wait, foul or no foul? And Mike, but she says, no foul. Like, Mike goes, like, no foul. You know, they already talk. You can see the timeout. Like, Jaco goes to give those two options, but Mike, no foul. You know, like, and then you're determined. Like, as a coach, you got to trust your team. You know, let's say no foul. Let's don't do a foul.
Right.
And Sardes missed the foul shot, right? That put you into that position. Otherwise, you guys would have been up three.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you made the foul, we would have fouled for sure.
Thank you, coach. Thank you. I get that question from people all the time, man. Well, you're up three with a little time left. You got it through the foul, right?
Well, we're in democracy, okay? Everybody has an opinion. So,
are we really? Are we? I don't know. I played for Zelda for 3 years. It wasn't much of democracy, I can tell you that.
Oh, man.
That's an incredible title, though, because that was between – I understand, Mike, what you explained to me about before the 2007 title.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, this was like, you know, the playoff, losing after 2008, and then going – trying to beat Olympiakos in the semifinal is not the easiest thing. And it's not only difficult to beat Olympiakos, it's 48 hours you got to go play the champs from last year. So that's got to be even more. I'm going to ask you, yeah, which is the sweeter of the three that we're going to talk about, but let's move to 2011. I loved it. It was a great, great atmosphere. It was different than what I was used to when I played. And I thought from a coaching standpoint, I'm going to start with you, coach. From a coaching standpoint, I've never seen a better coaching job in a Final Four than I saw from you and Šiška in that Final Four. Correct me if I'm wrong, but just the way you guys defended every play, every rotation is like it was almost robotical. Like if the ball went there, everybody's here. The ball goes to the corner, everybody's here. This guy cuts down the middle, the rotations are here. And I sat there, I watched it as a commentator, and I'm going, man, I mean, it was like everybody's on the same page. You know how hard that is, even though it's a Final Four, but for some reason with Šiška in Final Fours, it always seemed like that.
I think that Final Four, I don't want to say that title that had been won in the playoff series against Barcelona, but definitely that series against Barcelona, that they were the favorite.
Yeah.
They had to play at the home court, the Final Four. They were playing amazing. Xavi had a great team. Navarro was rock and roll in every game. Oof. You know, and as a team, they really were so good, and they were so balanced on what they were doing, defending and playing offense. So for us, for sure, if this semifinal were not, I mean, the playoffs and Soria series did not won for us the title, for sure the term, the character of the team, how we're going to look in this Final Four in Barcelona in 2011. So why I want to start from this playoff series is because we played with a not home court advantage. We play against the favorite.
Right.
And, you know, the decision was also, again, you said about who your devil is going to be. Am I right? So I said, is in basketball, it's like give and take. You got to give something. You got to take something. And you got to trust you know, your plan, but you cannot go with one plan. You got to have a big plan. At least this is my theory. You got to have at least three plans out there. If it's something exactly. doesn't work, because the other coach also is preparing. The other players are also preparing. You're not, the whole universe is not around you. So you got to be ready. But at that moment, you know, the players are saying, man, we had a great plan. Then the coaches goes, man, we had a great players. No, the players would say, no, without that plan, we're not going to win. No, without those players, we're not going to win, you know. But that's what
but
it is.
But it all, in the end, it all comes down to execution. You know that. And you have to have a great plan. You have to have great players to be able to execute properly.
Yeah. But we said all, guys, we can't lose from Navarre. You know, how are we going right. how are we gonna reduce the points and the efforts, like, is pretty much like with CSK over there. Like we talk about the 2007, because Navarro right. was shooting like 20 balls. And when Carlos is shooting 20 balls, he goes to the line, he's assisting, he's doing. So if we give him that game, then we have probably less possibilities. Plus we're playing on the road. So we have the system 2-2-1, all right? We go Barcelona. And I'll tell you what was the key point. You know, we go Barcelona and we go the first game we lost. We lost at the end, you know, I think by two, we lost the first game. And we talk in the locker room, and then the Greek media call me, Mr. Late Past Sirigos, to talk to the Greek media, to the Greek TV. And I see Sada is going out of the locker room and he starts shooting. I said, we got them. We got in their brain. You know, because all of a sudden, Sada or Grimao or
Rubio.
Rubio, exactly. Rubio, hell of a player, great player. They had to take the role of Carlos Navarro.
Mm-hmm.
The team used to play for Navarro, and it was normal. I mean, it was a great idea. But then I see that Sada was shooting because he was missing a couple of open looks because we want to have a double. We were putting Calathes with a quick legs over there to follow Carlos. We were switching every screen. You know, Mike, it's coming for there. You take him over, man. I'm going to... We're gonna suffer maybe on the block, but it's rather to suffer on the block than Carlos to go to mm-hmm. the line, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the team, as you said, we were falling this and that, and when I see Sada coming out and shooting, I said, okay, we got them on their mind, and then we tied the series over there in Barcelona, and we took over, and it was not easy. So because all of a sudden Ricky Rubio will make open looks, all right. Or Grimaldo will make open looks. The thing is, if you believe on that this you can live for, with you can live with, you know, and this is why we said, hey, coach, this is a great plan. This coach or the coaching staff has a great plan. No, we had those players to execute the plan. And going to the Final Four, I mean, we play against Siena on the semifinals. It was great semifinals, but because we don't have not much of a time, allow me to say this. We won the semifinal, and at the night of the semifinal, we find out that the final against Maccabi will be played all of a sudden at 2:45.
I remember this.
And then, why? Because, you know, in Israel, it's a big holiday. We got to change this and everything. And then all this changes the whole structure of the plan.
Of course,
and
yeah.
Then, you know, what to do, like shooting around in the morning? Where they said, you know, you got at 7 o'clock in the morning shooting around. And then the Amantidis, Mike Batiste, I don't know, then they come, hey, 6 o'clock, we go to the gym, we go shoot. And then when you see those players wanting to go at 7 o'clock in the morning shooting the ball, that's okay. This is what, you know, this is what it is. Like, we're going to win that, you know? So we went at 7 o'clock in the morning to shoot the ball and go through the routine, despite the fact that it was optional practice, because at 2:45, you got to be there and already do the warm-up.
Right. Such an odd time to play a basketball game. I forgot I forgot all about that, but as soon as you mentioned it, I'm like, damn, I remember that they changed it.
I got a memory, you know, as a coach.
Yeah.
I got it all.
Let's finish off talking about the Final Four then, because I know that playoff was important, because not only did you get rid of the favorite, but you got rid of the home team at that point. And I would really quick, Mike, I would like to ask you to feel like, did you feel a little bit bad for Barcelona since like a couple years ago you had won? Imagine you get knocked out when you know that the Final Four is in your backyard. That's not an easy.
It's not easy, but I mean, I'm not trying to sound like a little egotistical, but no, I didn't feel bad for them at all. I mean, but you also got to understand, like, I felt the feeling of losing a playoff series. And I also had the feeling of not making the playoff series. And I don't think nobody felt bad for us, you know?
It just is what it is, right?
And I think as competitors, you respect that. It's not a bad thing. But I just think, you know, as competitors, that's just how you are trained to not have those type of feelings.
I've obviously my question is rhetorical because we don't really care about what the other team feels like once they.
No, I don't.
Once they're out of it, doesn't matter.
No,
but
it doesn't matter. Other than my team, I don't care.
Exactly. We'll talk about it later if you need to, but right now, no. Other than the whole, what I saw as just a coaching clinic in the Final Four, I want to talk about Dimitris Diamantidis. I mean, that was one of the best seasons I think we've seen of a EuroLeague player that entire season. I think he won MVP of everything in that season as a coach and as a player, watching this dude play, man, because – you know, I go back and watch films. I didn't get a chance to watch it that often. That was my time back in the States. And he still doesn't look like a player to me nowadays. Didn't look like a player to me back in the day. He always looks so awkward, but I mean, he was so damn good. Talk to me about Diamantidis and everything he's done through these years, and especially with that championship in 2011 and an incredible MVP season.
Mito, like he wanted to call him, you know. A simple person, but a great person, a great father, a great teammate. I feel blessed to be around. You mentioned all 25, and the other day our press officer came over here in Hapoel Tel Aviv, and he said, "Coach, you've been coached like 12 of them. Did you realize that?"
That's awesome, isn't it?
I mean, and then we won an accounting. But do you understand what kind of a legacy is that? Like, what kind of a blessing is to be around this? Like those guys that still I can pick up the phone. The other day I was like 5 months ago. I was in Toronto with Mike and Darko and his coaching staff, and I spent 10-12 days over there in Toronto with them. So you know, Dimitris Diamantidis is an exceptional. It was an example for new generations. It was an example that basketball is changing. You know, we've been through the years. You mentioned your 63 points. Oscar Smith would have scored 100. Nick Gallis could have scored 100. Drazen Petrović could have scored 100. And obviously, you're looking for those players to score those 30 right now. But all of a sudden now, Dimitris Diamantidis with 5 points, 7 assists, and 10 rebounds.
And probably about 3 or 4 steals also.
Yeah, no doubt.
Because he could defend also.
And many others that the paper cannot see it, like those
exactly
deflections, those coverages that you have, the switches that he denies the post, uh-huh, you know, the deflections on rebounds so Mike can grab it after that or somebody else. So all of a sudden this now goes, all right, now Tio Papaloukas, Diamantidis, they might not be the scorers, but still, they are very, very, they're MVPs, you know?
Uh-huh.
And especially with Dimitris Diamantidis, you know, we need to talk about him a lot because when he came to Panathinaikos, was not the one that he could shoot the ball well.
Oh, yeah.
He could make plays for himself. He was the one, you know, like Željko goes on the first preseason in favorite players of Mike, Zlatibor. Mike's favorite players is Zlatibor, you know, like. So he goes after the preseason. And he goes, "Mitso, you know, we signed you over here. You're allowed to score also, you know? You're allowed to go to score. There's no wall over there." Like, you know,
right, told
him, like, I said, "Coach, you know, I want to make happy those players for the pass, those guys." And then if it comes, I said, "Okay, listen, if the opportunity is given and you create, you can go to the basket." And Mitso was, like, working so much. You know, he was from those basketball greatest that he felt that if he's not going to go and make 500 shots, he didn't do his job. I'll tell you that. Like, Mitso was Dimitris Diamantidis was the guy that we were celebrating the title in 2011 in Buzukyar. And everybody was drunk. Saras was drunk. Everybody, Mike was drunk. And Mitso goes and says, "Coach, what are we going to do tomorrow?" I look at him. It's 7 o'clock in the morning. We're going to sleep, you know. We're not going to shoot the ball. We're not going to shoot tomorrow. So, you know, such an example, man. Such a legend of respect towards basketball, what means to be professional, what means to evolve, because Mitchell was evolving. Every year was becoming better and better. I feel really honored to work with such players. So it's
as
incredible. A person, as a father now, as a member of the Starbucks
He's great.
Federation.
I got to go back here real quick because I want to mention one thing. Coach, I want to really thank you for coming on to the crossover as the assistant coach. It's our first time we've had an assistant coach on talking about the championships. And I don't want to forget to mention that if anybody who's watching this or listening to it doesn't know that Coach Itudis also has a 2016 EuroLeague title, 2019 EuroLeague title. And thank you guys for being here. Let's go. Starting five all-time last 25 years.
Oh, wow. Can I choose myself or not?
No.
Can't choose myself. Okay.
No, I'm not letting people choose themselves.
So I will go Demetridis, Spanoulis. Mm-hmm. Man.
Whew.
Man. Staroonis. I'm going to put Anthony Parker in there. That's four. And then as my fifth guy, since it's almost a replicate of me, I'm going to put Kyle Hines in there as the fifth guy since I can't choose myself.
Now, you're going small, aren't you?
Hey, it doesn't matter, you know.
We got I know, you got your start.
They're positionless guys, you know. Kyle can defend any position. So it's whatever five you choose, you're not wrong. You know, everybody on,
right,
that,
I know.
On that list.
That's just there.
Had an unbelievable career. So you can mismatch them how you want. You can put former teammates together again. However you want to do it, it's all good.
That's a great thing about it. It's so funny that you said that because when Coach was describing the way you came into Panathinaikos from Memphis, the first thing I thought was, except for that you're outside your ability, or you know, you went 0 for 9, so maybe your lack of ability at the time, they hit the three, was I was thinking Kyle Hines. That was my comparison to you, was Kyle Hines, you know, that little big man that's in the middle that does so many other things. Coach, it's up to you now. Start as I mean, this is hard. This could be harder for you. That's why I left it, because as you said, your assistant coach said, I have 12 guys that I've coached that are on this top 25.
Can
that's
I choose
half.
Those 12, please?
No. I love them all, man. I love them all. They're on the top 25, but I just need five, coach.
We need five. We're out of time. You said 1 hour. We are 1:15.
No, these guys are waiting for your answer.
Hey, Joe,
believe
don't
me.
Let them off the hook, Joe.
No, I'm not letting it. Mike, don't worry about it, man. Come on.
I go with Mitso, Dimitris Diamantidis. I go with Spanoulis at the two. I go with Bodirog at three. Four. Mike always wanted to play four. You know. Who's the four now? Who's your four? Who was your four, Mike?
My four was Anthony Parker. We went small. Like Joe said.
You went small.
We're going to figure it out. Trust me.
They're going to run and gun. They're playing like Paris.
I go Mike Batiste and Kyle Hines.
And both of them together. I like it.
Defend. We're going to spread with three guards. The ball will move so crazy. They can't beat us.
And in the paint, you're going to beat the shit out of people.
No doubt.
Yes. Mitso, Spanoulis, Bodiroga, Mike, and Kyle.
Fellas, thank you very much, Coach. A personal thank to you. You've always been friendly to me, always been open to me to do these interviews. Mike, you're absolutely amazing to interview.
Man, I appreciate it, man.
We're thankful having us over here. We're thankful being together. I'm tied with Mike and his family. I'm happy to see his family growing. You know, I'm happy seeing him doing great things, and he's going to become a great head coach in NBA or in Europe or whatever he works for sure. He has that mindset, knowledge, and tenacity. And we're all being thankful being over there with family and a couple of Panathinaikos, man. Those are 13 amazing years.
What do you guys think about that for a conversation? Dimitris Itudis, Mike Batiste talking about the golden years of Panathinaikos, three championships, 2007, 2009, 2011. This is what you get with the crossover with Joe R. Lucas's 25th anniversary edition leading up all the way to this year's Final Four. Stay tuned right here and check us out on all audio platforms. You have to like, you have to subscribe, and you have to download. Continue to keep an eye out for the crossover with Joe R. Lucas.